magic dragon lived by the sea and frolicked in the autumn mist in a land called Hanalei. Little Jackie Paper loved that rascal Puff and brought him strings and sealing wax and other fancy stuff. Oh, Puff the magic dragon lived by the sea and frolicked in the autumn mist in a land called Hanalei. Puff the magic dragon lived by the sea and frolicked in the autumn mist in a land called Hanalei. Together they would travel on a boat with billowed sail. Jackie kept a lookout perched on Puff's gigantic tail. Noble kings and princes would bow whene'er they came. Pirate ships would lower their flags when Puff roared out his name. Oh, Puff the magic dragon lived by the sea and frolicked in the autumn mist in a land called Hanalei. Puff the magic dragon lived by the sea and frolicked in the autumn mist in a land called Hanalei. A dragon lives forever, but not so little boys. Painted wings and giant's rings make way for other toys. One gray night it happened, Jackie Paper came no more. And Puff that mighty dragon, he ceased his fearless roar. His head was bent in sorrow, green scales fell like rain. Puff no longer went to play along the cherry lane. Without his lifelong friend, Puff could not be brave. So Puff, that mighty dragon, sadly slipped into his cave. Oh, Puff, the magic dragon, lived by the sea and frolicked in the autumn mist in a land called Hanalei. Puff the magic dragon lived by the sea and frolicked in the autumn mist in a land called Hanalei.
Oh, a magical way to begin this edition of The Song Is You with Peter, Paul, and Mary, going back to 1963 and Puff the Magic Dragon. And that's the way we welcome our guest this week, Colin Ambrose. Colin, welcome.
Hi, Bonnie.
The Song Is You.
Thank you.
Puff the Magic Dragon.
Yeah.
You were just quoting all the lines back to me.
Well, I have to. You know, it's the first song for me that resonated. The lyrics are great. Giants live forever, but not so little boys. And,
that makes
you know,
me feel
here
sad.
I am.
Well, you know,
I'm still a little boy, right. Very much so. And it was the song that connected the needle on the turntable to the speakers to the enjoyment in my parents' faces. And, you know, they would ask me to sing the song. I was not a singer, but, that you know, they realized it. And they knew that I loved the lyrics. You know, about the rascal, because I was certainly a rascal. And the, you know, what is it?
He wallows
in the autumnness. And, you know, I mean, for me, that's what I wallowed in, anything that I wasn't supposed to be in.
Oh, you were a rascal.
I loved this song. And it opened my eyes up to technology. It opened my eyes up to music, you know, outside of the context of kindergarten or whatever it was. I was probably 5 when I heard the song first time.
Wow. Puff the Magic Dragon and Colin Ambrose, who's a celebrated chef, owner of Estia's Little Kitchen, but you started out in Amagansett. We're going to get that story as well. But this is a story about you and through music, and you've heard the show.
I like the
times.
Show very much.
Yeah.
I, you know, so many of my friends have been on the show. I like the I like your whole programming day here, from Brian Cosgrove to Judy Carmichael, you know, and of course your show and the Mavens. I enjoy catching all of it. I spend a fair amount of time driving to my restaurant in Connecticut back and forth, and I get to exit 56, and then sometimes if I get distracted, I'm still on 88.3 when I get around the corner, and I start to pick it up again in Stamford, Connecticut. So, so I can actually hear your show from my restaurant parking lot in Darien, Connecticut at SDS American.
That's very cool. And that just opened fairly recently.
Two and a half years ago.
Okay.
We have a nice rhythm there.
Nice
lovely
rhythm.
Crowd. Very different. But once you step into the doors of SDS American, the same tones exist, whether it's color, what Jim Gingrich on the wall, Dan Rizzi on the wall, or the George's Ranch on the menu.
Oh, I love George's Ranch. What about the music playing? Is there?
The music is playing. I'm a fan of Pandora, and so we tune in.
Okay, you can say that. That's all right on this public radio
things.
Station.
Well, we're a long way from this public radio station there. And you know, I can tune into various genres for different parts of the day. We play a lot of Frank Sinatra in the evening. We like, the reggae. We like UB40 during the day.
Right,
so
sure.
That's a controllable thing. And yeah.
But Puff the Magic Dragon takes you back to 5 years old, you said. Where were you?
At the age of five, I was in Derby, New York. I have an interesting start in my life. I was born in Chattanooga, Tennessee. My family moved to Indianapolis when I was two. We then moved to Derby, New York, which is outside of Buffalo, followed by Omaha, Nebraska, on to San Juan, Puerto Rico, back to Omaha, and then finally, when I was coming out of third grade, we moved to Winnetka, Illinois, and that's where I really got my grounding.
My God, why all the moves?
My father was a grain trader, and he was intending to be the top guy in his field, and in time he became that. But he had to work his way through the grain elevators and the shipping and milling ports, so that's why we were in San Juan. He was in charge of a port there, and then in the end of his career, he was the director of shipping and milling for Continental Grain, and he worked in Geneva, Switzerland, and in New York City.
So you've had food then as
yeah,
a basis
oh my
in
gosh.
Your
as
life.
A kid, we'd go on trips, and my dad would stop at three different cornfields driving through Nebraska. After Omaha, on our way to Colorado, we'd have to check out the corn, and we'd stop at what I thought were the best steakhouses in the world, and they were just on the way. But my dad had a way of romancing food.
So you're a connoisseur of corn. You always were.
Well, of growing, certainly,
of growing.
Certainly, the gardens are a big part of my life.
Absolutely.
My grandfather was a doctor in the town of Whitewater, Wisconsin, and he had a large garden. My uncle, Steve, who was recognized as one of the foremost historians in the country, American historians, had a beautiful garden at his home in New Orleans. And all of my cousins today have gardens. My uncle has a beautiful garden in Maine. So gardening is just a component of the Ambrose genetic structure.
What about music?
Music, not so much.
No?
We love it, but I tried to learn to play the trumpet, and it was to my parents' great enthusiasm when I explained to them that I really didn't think that it was a good idea after the first 3 or 4 months because I was trying to learn it in the basement, and everybody had to endure it, you know.
But you were listening, so
I was listening, and my friends loved music, and I grew up in Chicago. I mean, you know, my formative years. I think it'll be pretty obvious as we go through this list. I was a racetrack rock and roll junkie. You know, I mean, I went to shows at the racetracks around Chicago, and we saw all the great bands of that generation.
Why racetracks?
That's where they had.
That's where they had the bands.
Oh, Marshall Tucker would play.
Oh, I love Marshall.
Leonard Skinnerd and Johnny Winter, and I mean everything, High and Low. You wouldn't see the big acts there. You would see those. I imagine today Kid Rock probably plays racetracks. I'm not great. I do love that song about I love the song about the catching walleyes at the end of the dock, you know. But that's kind of how I grew up, was going racetrack to racetrack on weekends.
And yet we've got Joni Mitchell up next.
Well, so. Yeah, Joni Mitchell. Well, there's that happened. That was the next turntable in my life. When I was about, when was it, 71?
71.
Yeah, I would have been, 16, and we have a beautiful home on a lake in northern Wisconsin that our cabin is the only home on the lake. And my sister got a Panasonic, you remember them, they had round speakers, and it was a Panasonic stereo. And that summer, I think I heard Joni Mitchell Blue playing on that turntable 1,000 times. Mm. And it was just, it was magical to be catching frogs and bluegills in this lake and listening to this woman's heavenly voice,
The wind is in from Africa. Last night I couldn't sleep. Oh, it sure is hard to leave here, Carrie, but it's really not my home. My fingernails are filthy, I've got beach tar on my feet, and I miss my clean white linen and my fancy French cologne. Oh, Carrie, get out your cage. These friends of mine, let's have another round for the bright red devil who keeps me in this tourist town. Come on, Carrie, get out your cage. And rent me a grand piano and put some flowers around my room. But let's not talk about fare-thee-wells now. The night is a starry dawn, and they're playing that scratchy rock and roll beneath the maple moon. Come on, Carrie, get out your cage. I couldn't sleep. Oh, it sure is hard to leave you, but it's really not my home. Maybe it's been too long a time since I was scrambling down in the street. Now they got me used to that clean white linen and that fancy French cologne.
It's Joni Mitchell and Carrie from the Blue album. I love that you were fishing. We're here with Colin Ambrose on the song As You. You're fishing for bluegills and you're listening to the Blue album. Somehow it all sort of comes together,
with
right?
With the blue sky.
With the blue sky.
And getting this message in my head, as a young guy, talking about setting the table. You know, my finest silver. That's tableware we're talking about. At the Mermaid Cafe, that was a joint that she hung out in, and I would create these things in my head about what it would be like if I had a Mermaid Cafe. So, you know, these songs were setting me up in many ways for where I was going. And I think the next song is another one that, you know, we're gonna go next to Bob Seger, and in this song he talks about being on the road and walking in, feeling all the eyes upon me, and shaking off the cold, and you know, that was another piece of me fantasizing about what it would be like to be the guy that was doing the right thing for the people.
I want to know, back to when you said you were a rascal, like Puff the Magic Dragon.
Yeah, I was.
How were you a rascal?
Well, I just, you know, I had two sisters. And
older, younger?
One each. I had, and we were all, you know, in that you know, quintessential baby boom tradition. We were all, 18 months apart. And, you know, I just wasn't the brother that was you know, looking out for my sister's best interest. I wish I was, but you know, the reality is that I was the one who was splashing in the puddles and you know, maybe dunking my little sister when we were swimming across the lake. She
did still you blow won't go up Barbie
heads?
With me.
Did you? I did.
You
worse,
did that okay.
Actually.
Oh,
I did worse, and you know, we'll get to that later. But that's the kind of the fun walk through the 70s that we're going to go on today.
But Bob Seger right now, let's turn the page. Back to 73.
Bob Seger, another guy from the Midwest who, you know, was pretty much in every basement in my neighborhood.
East of Omaha, you can listen to the engine moaning out his one note song. You can think about the woman or the girl you knew the night before. But your thoughts will soon be wandering the way they always do. When you're riding 16 hours and there's nothing much to do, and you don't feel much like riding, you just wish the trip was through. See, here I am on the road again. There I am up on the stage. Here I go, playing star again. There I go, turn the page. Well, you walk into a restaurant, strung out from the road. You feel the eyes upon you as you're shaking off the cold. You pretend it doesn't bother you, but you just want to explode. Most times you can't hear them talk, other times you can. All the same old cliches. Is that a woman or a man? You always seem outnumbered. You don't dare make a stand. Here I am on the road again. There I am up on the stage. Here I go playing star again. There I go, turn the page. Yeah.
from the amplifiers ringing in your head. You smoke the day's last cigarette, remembering what she said. Ah, here I am, on the road again. There I am, up on the stage. Here I go, playing star again. There I go, turn the page.
If you can.
and it's pronounced Leonard Skinnerd, 1973. So you reminded me, Colin, I'm looking at this list that you sent me, and I thought you gave me the pronunciation, but you reminded me that was the name of the album.
Yeah, it was one of the greatest albums of all time. I think Ronnie Van Zant was you know, a world-class rocker. And with the Southern twist, which I like very much.
They did Sweet Home Alabama, right?
Yeah, they did, and a lot of other good songs. And unfortunately, he and a bunch of other guys in the band died in 77 in an airplane crash.
Oh.
So, you know, that was a period at the end of that great run. But, you know, this was another band that I saw several times at racetracks. And, you know, the euphoria that goes on in a young man's life, you know, at that racetrack when all of the substances are in full, you know, full pace. And the action around me was wild. And you know, but the song, you know, The Simple Man, The Only Son, these things are, you know, part of the thoughts that I was going through. I didn't know whether I was going to become a goat farmer or, you know, a ski instructor. I didn't know where I was going. And you know,
do you regret anything?
Very little. No. I think I regret not working harder in school. I was not the kind of student that my sisters were. And they were a great example for me. I just never picked up on it. And I regret not being the son, you know, that my father would have liked me when I was active with him. I think in the end of his life, he recognized that, you know, we had a great life together. But, you know, there was some really hard times. You know, I was not one who listened, and he provided, and I wasn't grateful for a long time. But, you know, I don't regret being aware of the stuff that he was giving me in the end. You know, I mean, the constellations he taught me.
Wow.
You know, he taught me how to walk through a garden. He taught me how to, my grandmother taught me, both my grandmothers taught me how to cook. My first girlfriend taught me how to cook. And all of those cues I picked up on. You know, algebra and biology were not things that I really tied into, you know, but so it goes, you know, you move forward.
And you're grateful for many things, including this next band, I take it,
oh,
yes?
Oh, my gosh. Unreal. The life on
the road.
Did
you ever see The Dead?
Several times. And this song I chose because one of my best friends, the guy who introduced me to my wife, Chris Simons, used to call me Rambler because that was... That was his nickname for me because I was always moving.
Settle down, ease.
Okay, Colin Ambrose and Ramblin' Rose with the Grateful Dead playing some of his top 10 favorites. Was this a difficult assignment for you? Everybody talks about how hard this is to pick your top 10. Was this hard?
No. I write menus every day. So yeah. I have to make my mind up and move forward.
This
you
is
know?
True.
And it was very, it was fun.
This is your menu.
Yeah, this is my menu. You know, ramble on, baby, settle down easy. You know, that's what I have to do every day because I wake up with a mind full of ideas. And
still.
Yeah. And you know, sometimes I dropped my middle child, Mansell, off at school the other day. She's going to be a freshman at the University of the South in Sewanee, Tennessee. And I observed her in her first day of interaction on a college campus. And it was a wild ride, you know. I wanted to tell her everything that I didn't do right, you know. But she's going to be fine.
She's going to be fine. Yeah. And Grateful Dead, you wanted to say something about this, that being generic dead or something?
Yeah, well, it's important to note that, you know, for people that followed the trail with the Grateful Dead for as long as many of my close friends did, this was not a live set. This came from an album, Europe 72. But that Ramble on Rose very easily could have been a 25-minute song.
Easily.
And
we had to fade it out a little bit.
Yeah.
Just sorry, guys. But the Dead went on.
And
yeah,
they did. And they were very organized in their presentation, but unstructured in the way that they went about things.
Hmm.
And I thought that was great. You know,
just again, Colin Ambrose, just thinking delayed here, delayed reaction, that you're related to Stephen Ambrose, who's like the dean of World War II writers. Would you call him that? One of them?
Yeah. And also the American West. He wrote great books about Crazy Horse and Custer. He wrote a book called Nothing Like It about the establishments of the railroads. He wrote Undaunted Courage about the Lewis and Clark Expedition.
Oof.
So in addition to the great Citizen Soldiers, which was the spawn to Saving Private Ryan, and also a lot of other work that he did on World War II. Band of Brothers was his work.
Yes.
The Pacific was the work of my cousin Hugh, who was at his side for a long time. He was a very important person in my life because I didn't have a big brother, and I had two sisters who on occasion would have enough of me, and my folks would send me down to New Orleans to be with my uncle.
That's where you taught, right?
He taught in New Orleans, and he would teach me to fish, and he would I'd run with his boys.
But did he teach you about the military in World War II? What was he like?
He was great. The only piece that I really got of that was after graduating from college in 1984, he called me one day in April and he said, I want you to be on the tour with me. And I knew a little bit about what he was talking about, but I said, well, you know, I've got to graduate. And he said, you know, do you think that cap and gown is really going to get you anything? He said, I'm asking you to travel with me for 3 weeks to all of the major battlefields of World War II. And we're going to have leaders from those battles with us. And so I didn't graduate with my class. I was on an airplane going to London, and I spent 3 weeks at his side.
Went to Normandy?
We went to Normandy. We went to all of the great battlefields, and we ended up in Berlin. And every day of that trip is still, you know, right in the forefront of my mind.
Sure.
Yeah. And he was just a great friend. He really was. He came out to the East End. My aunt's family was from Hampton Bays. And so they had reasons on occasion to come. And he would always stay with us. And we'd go fishing. And,
you read all his books? You've read all his books?
I have all of his books. I wish I could say I've read them all. I've read a lot of them. But I still have, my dad, who passed in February, spent the last 3 years of his life reading all of his brother's books.
Wow.
Again, I think he had read them before, but
sure.
He really, he was an important person to a lot of people and primary to me.
I'm sorry for your loss too so recently, Colin.
Thank you.
Colin Ambrose with us on The Song Is You and the power of music. It's incredible. Tell us about this next, Little Women?
Yeah, Little Women. Jerry Joseph is a very close friend of mine since I was 18. And Little Women was a band that would roam about the West, and their home was Logan, Utah, where I went to school. And, you know, I was not an academic. So after my freshman year, I was told to take some time off. But I stayed in Logan, and I worked in various industries. I planted trees for a while, and I worked in the oil business, but I always came back to Logan. And Jerry was often playing in Logan, but if I was in Bozeman, he was in Bozeman. If I was in Jackson Hole, he was in Jackson. If I was in southern Utah or Park City, his band would be coming through. So I saw him in all these different places, and I still visit him. He lived in Harlem for a while. His band is now called Stockholm Syndrome. But Screamin' Annie is just my favorite Little Women song. And Jerry is one of those guys. We got into a lot of hijinks together, and we love each other very much. So.
My mama, she hates my daddy too. She loves to tell me she hates the things I do. She loves to lie beside me almost every night. Well, she's no lady, she's my wife. The preacher asked her and she said I do. The preacher asked me and she said yes, he does too. The preacher said, I pronounce you 99 to life. Son, she's no lady, she's your wife. And I can't remember how I met her. Seemed like she's always just been a hanging here off my right arm. And I can't remember how I ever thought that I just live without a woman's charm. And even though she loves the smell of French perfume, and even though she walks around in high-heeled shoes, well, all I know is I'm the one who pays her price. Man, she's no lady, she's my wife. Remember how I ever thought that I just couldn't live without a woman's charms. Yeah, she hates my mama, she hates my daddy too. She loves to tell me how much she hates the things I do. She loves to lie beside me almost every night. Well, she's no lady, she's my wife. Well, she's no lady, she's my wife.
Colin Ambrose on the songs you choosing, a little Lyle Lovett. And Colin, I got to say that if you admit to being a bad boy, you'd have to pick Lyle Lovett.
I have to. Well, I love high heels and the smell of French perfume, and so does my wife, I think. And so, you know, I mean, my wife is a lady, though.
She's my wife. That's a great song. That's great. And speaking of shoes, do I understand I found a soulmate here?
Well, a soulmate,
S-O-L-E, a soulmate. You love shoes.
It's just been always one of those things that catches
my eye.
What,
men's or women's?
Anything. Women's shoes. You know, I love pictures of women's closets just because I like the way they line the shoes up, you know. I like things in order.
Sarah Jessica Parker and Sex and the City building a closet just for her shoes.
She came to one of my restaurants for dinner one night, and we had a really nice chat.
Oh, bet.
My friend Robbie Bates brought her in. So
you have so many people coming in to your restaurants.
Lots of people, yeah.
Now, is it...
So, and you know, it's funny. That's a nice segue to the story about this Lyle thing, because the first restaurant that I owned, I had worked in a lot of restaurants behind the bar. But my first restaurant that I actually was responsible for the payroll on was called Estia, and it was in Amagansett.
Which means?
Estia is the Greek goddess of hospitality. And it's a word for hospitality in Greek. And I bought it from a Greek family. And it doesn't mean that to me today. Today it means established in Amagansett to me. And that's why we can have an Estia in Darien, Connecticut, and I'm okay with that. But it might have been my third or fourth day in Amagansett. We did the deal very quickly. I was transitioning out of one industry and into another. Media was my thing for about 10 years out of college. And I bought Estia, and we did the deal very quickly, and I opened the day after we closed with the same staff and the same menu. And the first thing I did to start to transition it into being my space was buy a CD player. And I hooked it up to the existing stereo system with the 8x10 coaxials in the ceiling. And I went out, and this was one of my fave CDs. And this song was on the speakers at the time. It was 2:30 in the afternoon. And a guy walked in, and he sat down and ordered a grilled cheese. And the room was almost empty by that time. And I'm looking at this guy, and I know him, but I don't. And, you know, I was early in this game, and it was March of 1992, and we're talking. And eventually I said, "Hi, my name is Colin. I've recently bought the restaurant." And he said, "Well, I know that." And I didn't know why he would know that. And then he said, "I knew it the minute I walked in and heard Lyle on the stereo." And he said it in such a way that this guy knew Lyle Lovett. I could tell by the way he was talking. And I didn't quite know where he was, but he introduced himself as George. And we talked for a while. And when he got up and walked out, I realized that it was G.E. Smith. And so, you know, I've always carried that. G.E. was my first high-profile friend, and in the Amagansett space. And I quickly met John Alexander, who was also a friend of GE's and Taylor's. And John and I got to know each other, and I asked John about fallow land. Do you know anybody who might have some space that I could put a garden on? And he said at the time he didn't, but he introduced me to Scott Chasky, who has become my
mentor and
my guru in the growing area. And one day he came back in and he asked me if I had found that piece of land, and I said no. And he found it for me. And through my relationship with John, I was able to meet Lauren. And Lauren Michaels had a piece of land that was just like I had asked for, fallow, ready to be tilled. And I gardened on that property for 12 years. And that probably is an appropriate segue into our next song.
Yeah, because you got to hear a lot of concerts in this garden.
That's right.
In back of the Stephen Talkhouse.
Contiguous to the Talkhouse property.
Including this one.
Chinese folk song. So, I mean, I sing this song every night of my life. I never tire of it. It's hard to sing, but I love it. All right.
Roxanne, you don't have to put on the red light. Those days are over. You don't have to say about it through the night. Streets for money. You don't care if it's wrong or if it's right. Roxanne, you don't have to put on the red light. Roxanne, you don't have to put on the red light. I love you since I knew you. I wouldn't talk now to you. I have to tell you just how I feel. I won't share you with another boy. You know my mind is made up, so put away your makeup. Told you once, I won't tell you again. It's a bad way. Roxanne, you don't have to put on the red light. Roxanne,
so you're gardening out in back of the Talkhouse and you hear Sting?
Yeah, it was great. What happened was Peter, the guy that Peter Hunterkamp, who is the impresario at the Talkhouse, had cut a deal with the production company that did that concert. They didn't really want to have the riffraff, so to speak, in the place. But Peter has such a group that support him, that he stuck up for them and made sure that they could come and hear the show on the back deck. And the speakers were pointed right at my garden. So I was alone, you know, picking carrots and tomatoes in the garden while this show was being played. And that song was one of the songs that I remember the most, because not long after that, I was on the beach, and a very good friend of ours, Roxanne Briggs, took me aside, and she said, "Hey, you know, I just heard the Tony Coffee Shop on the Bridgehampton Turnpike is going on the market, and you might want to go down there, because I think it would be a great spot for Estia."
Roxanne to Roxanne.
Roxanne
to Roxanne.
Oh,
my God.
And so that I dedicate that song to Roxanne Briggs, because she changed my life.
And how about this next song, Bill Withers, you dedicate to?
Just to my wife. You know, it's about a lot of things that are involved in a long-term relationship, and being lonely is one of them. And my kids and my wife moved to New York for about 6 years when my oldest was going into fifth grade, so that they could go to the best schools available. And you know, this song is just you know, there is no sunshine when she's not around.
Ain't no sunshine when she's gone. It's not warm when she's away. Ain't no sunshine when she's gone. And she's always gone too long. Anytime she goes away, I wonder this time where she's gone. I wonder if she's gone to stay. Ain't no sunshine when she's gone, and this house
just ain't no home anytime she goes away. And I know, 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 I know. Sunshine when she's gone, only darkness every day. Ain't no sunshine when she's gone, and this house just ain't no home anytime she goes away.
This is one of those songs, Bill Withers on The Song Is You, that I never tire of.
Yeah,
every day, you hear it over and over and over again, right? And what a beautiful romantic dedication.
It can put you
dedication.
To sleep with a smile on your face.
Yeah, right, right. Bill Withers and Ain't No Sunshine, dedicated to your wife of how many years?
23 years.
Yay.
We've been together for longer, but the ring has gone on and off for 23 years.
I just got engaged, but I'm driving my engagement ring.
Well, there you
go. It's a Jeep. There you go.
But
anyway, Colin Amrell is going to wrap up here, and we always do on The Song Is You with a guilty pleasure. So did you have a hard time picking one? Or?
I did. You know, I'm a huge Willie Nelson fan. And so, you know, I one of my faves is, you know, my heroes will always be Mamas Don't Let Your Babies Grow Up to Be Cowboys. And then the other one is, you know, this song that we're going to play, you know, about heroes.
And my heroes will always be.
And they kind of go against each other, you know. But the one I chose was My Heroes Will Always Be Cowboys, because my cowboys don't particularly wear boots and hats, but they live the lonely life of a cowboy, and they make choices that they know are going to benefit them later in their lives, you know. And I'm talking about guys like John Alexander, who, you know, spend a lot of time in the studio alone, and they take a lot of risks in their lives. Eric Fischel, great example, you know, Bad Boy. He wrote the book. And when he comes to see me at the restaurant, I always try to get over to say hello, because, you know, he is one of my heroes. The guy has accomplished things that he never could have imagined when he was a kid. And yet, look at him today. And John the same way, and Dan Rizzi, and Donald Sultan, and Patton Miller, and all of these guys who made the effort to step outside of the conventional.
You're naming all artists.
Yeah, they're all
painters.
My heroes. They
yeah?
really are. Yeah, I love those guys.
Why
and they're
painters?
My friends.
Why
so.
Painters in particular?
Just because, you know, again, you know, the solitude of the studio is something that I used to spend a lot of time visiting him in his studio, and he was disciplined, and he was successful because of his discipline. And that really, you know, that's where I try to go with my restaurant projects. They don't always work the way that I hope that they do, and I imagine that's the same thing with the canvas. You know, sometimes they paint a canvas that they think is just perfect, and it doesn't sell. And the one that they're not that crazy about, everybody wants to buy. So, you know, those guys, and 'cause they're around me, and they support me, and that's why they're my heroes.
But also, your heroes will always be cowboys.
Oh, yeah.
Obviously.
Oh, well, I love a good cowboy.
Colin Amrell, thank you so much.
It's been a pleasure.
Thank you.
The Song Is You, produced and hosted by Bonnie Grice. Engineering and post-production by Kyle Lynch. Follow us on Facebook. Dreaming. The Song Is You is a production of BLG
Being
Productions
cowboy,
and WPPB, Peconic Public Broadcasting.
Cowboy way. Pursuing the life of my high-riding heroes, I burned up my childhood days. I learned all the rules of a modern-day drifter, Don't you hold on to nothing too long. Just take what you need from the ladies that leave them with the words of a sad country song. My heroes have always been cowboys, and they still are, it seems, sadly in search of, and one step in back of themselves and their slow-moving dreams. Cowboys are special, with their own brand of misery from being alone too long. They die from the cold in the arms of a madman, knowing well that your best days are gone. Picking up hookers instead of my pen, I let the words of my youth fade away. Old worn out saddles and old worn out memories, but no one and no place to stay. My heroes have always been cowboys, and they still are, it seems, sadly in search of, and one step and back of themselves and their slow-moving dreams. Sadly in search of, and one step and back of themselves and their slow-moving dreams.